Blog Talk Radio.
Personally, I don't think a study
was ever necessary to come up with this obvious conclusion. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that using rainwater instead of tap water is a smart and useful way to conserve this valuable resource, especially in areas like the West where drought is a major concern. Well, additionally, the study revealed that only about 3% of Douglas County's precipitation ended up in the streams and rivers that are supposedly being robbed of the rainwater by rainwater collectors. The other 97% either evaporated or seeped into the ground to be used by plants. This hint at why bureaucrats can't really use the argument that collecting rainwater prevents that water from getting to where it was intended to go. So little of it actually makes it to the final destination that virtually every household could collect many rain barrels worth of water, and it would have practically no effect on the amount that ends up in the streams and rivers. It's all about control, really. As long as people remain unaware and uninformed about important issues, the government will continue to chip away at the freedoms we enjoy. The only reason these water restrictions are finally starting to change for the better is because people started to notice that they worked to do something to reverse the law. Even though these laws restricting water collection have been on the books for more than 100 years in some cases, they're slowly being reversed thanks to efforts by citizens who have decided that's enough is enough. Because if we can't even freely collect the rain that falls all around us, then what exactly can we freely do? The rainwater issue highlights a serious overall problem in America today, diminishing freedom and increasing government control. Today, we've basically been reprogrammed to think that we need permission from the government to exercise our inalienable rights, when in fact the government is supposed to derive its power from us. The American Republic was designed so that a government would serve the people to protect and uphold freedom and liberty. But increasingly, our own government is restricting people from their rights to engage in common sense fundamental action, such as collecting rainwater or buying raw milk from the farmer next door. Today we are living under a government that has slowly siphoned off our freedoms only to occasionally grant us back a few limited ones under the pretense that they're doing us a benevolent favor. Well, fight back against enslavement. As long as people believe their rights stem from the government, not the other way around, they will always be enslaved. Whatever rights and freedoms we think we still have will be quickly eroded by a system of bureaucratic power that seeks only to expand its control. Because the same argument that now being used to restrict rainwater collection could, of course, be used to declare that you have no right to the air you breathe either. After all, government could declare the air to be somebody else's air, and then they would charge you an air tax or an air royalty and demand you pay money for every breath that keeps you alive. Well, think it couldn't happen? Just give it time. The government already claims it owns your land and house, effectively. If you really think you own your home, just stop paying property taxes and see how long you'll still own it. Your county or city will seize it and then sell it to pay off your tax debt. That proves who really owns it in the first place, and it's not you. So how about questions of who owns your body? According to the U.S. Patent and Trade Office, U.S. corporations and universities already own 20% of your genetic code. Your own body, they claim, is partially the property of someone else. So if they own your land, your water, and your body, how long before they claim to own your air, your mind, and even your soul? Unless we stand up against tyranny, it will creep upon us day after day until we find ourselves totally enslaved by a world of corporate government collusion where everything of value is owned by powerful corporations, all enforced at gunpoint by local law enforcement. That's frightening, isn't it, folks? I thought it was. I thought it was. Well, Rhode Island marijuana decriminalization just went into effect. No more arrests for having up to an ounce, and now police can focus on real crime. Well, congratulations, Rhode Island. Celebrate responsibility. You can go to marijuanamajority.com. There about my dog. I got excited. This is rather a frightening article. I was trading about is the president a pathological liar? Be surprised with what we have discovered. Bush and Obama are so close. So this is an interesting article in that it kind of describes the pathology or the pathological aspect of a liar. It says, the Obama record. The most frightening aspect of this president may not be his radical ideology, but his rank dishonesty in selling that ideology. Now he's been caught lying about family racism. Forgive me for my dog. This is only the latest example of a growing body of fabrications, embellishments, and outright lies told by this president, who had a real and possibly pathological problem with the truth. Stacked up, his whoppers would even make Bill Clinton blush. Here's a sampling. In Dreams for My Father, in 1995, Obama used the story of his paternal grandfather, imprisonment and torture at the hands of British colonists in Kenya as an example of white cruelty. He claimed Hussein Onago Obama was unjustly detained for 6 months before being released a crippled, lice-ridden old man. In fact, none of this is true. According to Washington Post editor and biographer David Moranis, who traveled to Kenya to investigate the tale, his grandfather was not detained or beaten by his white rulers, as Obama, writing as a 34-year-old lawyer, claimed. This is only the latest example of a growing body of fabrications embellished in outright lies told by this president, who has a real and possibly pathological problem with the truth. Stacked up, his whoppers would make even Bill Clinton blush. Here's a sampling. Obama has repeatedly claimed his white grandfather, Stanley Dunham, fought in Patton's army when he was equipped with no combat in World War II. Lie number two. Obama claimed Dunham, a communist sympathizer, signed up for duty the day after Pearl Harbor, when in fact he waited 6 months. Lie number three. Obama claimed his father fought when he got back to Kenya according to tribalism and nepotism, but ultimately was blackballed from the government, when in fact he fought against capitalism and lost his job when he advocated communism. Lie number four. Obama has claimed his late mother's health insurer refused to pay her treatment for cancer while citing a pre-existing condition, when Cigna paid all her hospital bills and never denied payment. Number five, Obama claimed he and black high school friend named Ray were ostracized in Honolulu, when in fact the friend Keith Kakugawa was half Japanese and neither of them experienced discrimination. Lie number six. Obama claimed the father of his Indonesian stepfather was killed by Dutch soldiers while fighting for Indonesian independence, when in fact the story turns out to be a concocted myth in almost all respects. Lie number seven. Obama claims his parents decided to marry in the excitement of the Selma Civil Rights March of 1965, and that he personally has a claim on Selma, when in fact they were married several years earlier. So, you know, they really gotta, you know, freak you out and hear this stuff. Number eight, okay. It says, Obama claims his father got to study in the U.S. thanks to JFK's effort to bring young Africans over to America, when in fact the Kenyan airlift his father participated in occurred in 1959 under Ike. Obama submitted a phony bio to his book publicist claiming he was born in Kenya. Obama denied being a member of the Socialist New Party, but a member roster of the Chicago chapter of the party lists him joining on January 11, 1996. Socialist New Party. Number 11. Obama claimed that he had only a passing acquaintance with Weather Underground terrorist Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, when in fact they held a fundraiser for their Hyde Park neighbor in their living room, and years later, while Obama served in the U.S. Senate, hosted a barbecue for him in their backyard. And number 12. Okay, Obama claimed he never heard Reverend Jeremiah Wright spew any anti-American invectives while sitting in his pew for 20 years, when in fact Obama has moved to tears hearing Wright condemn white folks in the U.S. for bombing other countries, and even named his second book after the sermon. Obama claimed, this is number 13, Obama claimed he got in a big fight with old white flame Genevieve Cook, who, after seeing a black play, asked why black people were so angry all the time, when in fact she never saw the play nor made the remark. In both his autobiographies, Obama paints a false portrait of a still racist America and West, where he, his friends, and relatives are victims by that racism. Conveniently, his remedy is redistributive justice through bigger government. So, you know, the guy's a liar, man. No question about it. No question about it. It says here, everything open? Alright. The defining characteristics of Pseudologia Fantastica. I love this. Let me read this. This is go up a little further. Pseudologia Fantastica. Mythomania, compulsive lying, and pathological lying are three of several terms applied by psychiatrists for behavior of habitual or compulsive lying. It was first described in the medical literature in 1891 by Anton Delbruck. Although it is a controversial topic, pathological lying has been defined as falsification entirely disproportionate to any discernible end in view, may be extensive and very complicated, and may manifest over a period of years or even a lifetime. An individual may be aware they are lying, or may believe they are telling the truth, but being unaware that they are relating fantasies. Characteristics. The defining characteristics of pseudologia fantastica are, number one, the stories told are not entirely improbable and often have some element of truth. They are not a manifestation or delusion of some broader type of psychosis, and upon confrontation, the teller can admit them to be untrue, even if unwillingly. Number two, the fabricative tendency is long-lasting. It is not provoked by the immediate situation or social pressure as much as it is an innate trait of the personality. Right? And number three, a definitely internal, not an external motive for the behavior can be discerned clinically. Long-lasting extortion or habitual spousal battery might cause a person to lie repeatedly without the lying being a pathological symptom. And four, the stories told tend toward presenting the liar favorably. For example, the person might be presented as being fantastically brave, knowing or being related to many famous people. And Pseudologia Fantastica may also present a false memory syndrome, where the sufferer genuinely believes that fictitious events have taken place, regardless that these events are fantasies. And a sufferer may believe that he or she has committed superhuman acts of altruism and love, or has committed equally grandiose acts of diabolical evil, for which the sufferer must atone, or has already atoned for it in his or her fantasies. The second is the pathological liar. The next one. Lying is the act of not both knowingly and intentionally, willfully making a false statement. Most people do so out of fear. Pathological lying is considered a mental illness because it takes on rational judgment and progresses into the fantasy world and back. Excessive lying is a common symptom of several mental illnesses. For instance, people who suffer from antisocial personal disorder use lying to benefit from others. Some individuals with borderline personality disorder lie for attention by claiming they've been treated poorly, though it is not diagnostic. And pathological lying, on the other hand, can be described as an addiction to lying. It is when an individual consistently lies for no personal gain. The lies are commonly transparent and often seem rather pointless. There are many consequences of being a pathological liar. Due to lack of trust, most pathological liar relationships and friendships fail. If the disease continues to progress, lying could become so severe as to cause legal problems, including but not limited to fraud. And psychotherapy appears to be one of the only methods to treat a person suffering from psychological lying. No research has been performed regarding the use of pharmaceutical medication to treat pathological liars. And some research suggests that certain people may have a predisposition to lying. And pathological lying is a complex phenomenon differing from other mental illnesses. It has many life-changing consequences for those who must live with the illness. And currently, there is not enough research in the area of pathological lying to guarantee a cure. So, you know, this is what we're dealing with here. When we're dealing with Mr. Obama and so many, politicians. I have one more article, and then I'm going to go to take a little break, music break. But this here is one of the
CNN gets paid by the government to create the news.
the way they want it reported. Pretty sick stuff. Got a quote that I like to I'll break with. It's by Voltaire, great French philosopher. He said it's dangerous to be right when the government is wrong. Boy, is he right. Boy, is he right. So, from there, we will go to, I'll take a quick break. And, we'll be back. Really? Let's go to a quick music break, and we'll be back after that. Something that really kind of, just beyond the pale for me, especially since I refuse to have vaccinations. But here's the situation that's even worse, because from a god awful place like Iowa, and a University of Iowa. I mean, who the hell is kidding who with this thing? But, Why does a little state like Iowa have so much clout? Little stinking farm state full of pigs and you know, and stuff like that. I mean, have such tremendous power, being the first state in the primaries, being the, you know, and now a new phone application called Vaccine Refused, developed by the University of Iowa, of all freaking places, okay? Just as the name implies, vaccine refusals. The application is intended to be used by health professionals to report the location of the refusal, the vaccine refused, and the patient's demographics. The output of the data, which is supposedly anonymous and stored securely at the University of Iowa, okay, provides a heat map for the refusals. I'm going to show you how the government will likely use this information, and it isn't pretty. Let me tell you more. Okay, application government. Application. The application is government funded. To understand the importance of this particular application, we need to know how it is being funded and who is leading the research. This will give us a clue as to how the data would like to be used. The research for the phone application is led by Dr. Philip Polgreen, Director of Infectious Diseases, Disease Society of America's Emerging Infectious Networks. And now remember, this comes from the University of freaking Iowa, okay? Research for the phone app is led by this character. Why is this significant? Well, according to the IDSA website, in 1995, the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, granted a cooperative agreement program award for the Infectious Diseases Society of America to develop a provider-based emerging infection sentinel network, the Emerging Infections Network. The project's main University of Iowa page clearly states the research is funded by the National Institutes of Health and by a contract from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So now we know the lead researcher for the phone application has direct ties to the Center for Disease Control, as well receiving funds for the research. And here's the important point. Vaccine refused application is technologically black boxing. This is your typical black boxing effort in developing tracking technology. By this I mean very simply, to separate technologies are being, two separate technologies are being developed and will be combined to form a system at a later date. An analogy would be the designing of a car. The engine, steering, braking systems are all developed separately, but then combining in the manufacturing process to make the car. Well, much in the same way, an application tracking vaccine refusals will seem harmless on the surface. However, the Centers of Disease Control are collecting other data. In a recent article, I wrote about how the CDC collects information on who vaccinates their children and who does not. They also know how many children have opted out of being vaccinated. If you don't know, the Centers for Disease Control have been quietly rolling out a nationwide program calling the Immunization Information Status Systems, registering your vaccination information. And if you refuse or not, your databases. But what would happen if data from the phone application was combined or analyzed with vaccine registry information? Well, it's the correlation of data. Here's what you need to know. The government, along with corporations, collect, correlates, and data and tracks data about you. I highly recommend a very informational article written by an information security expert, Bruce Schneer. He writes, governments are happy to use the data corporations collect, occasionally demanding that they collect more and save it longer to spy on us. And corporations are happy to buy data from governments. Right? Together, the powerful spy on the powerless. And they're not going to give up their positions of power, despite what the people want. As far the CDC's Immunization Information System already tracks your vaccine refusals. If you recall from the last article, a small amount of the data collected included the patient's name, birth date, mother's name, home address, the phone number, and vaccine provider. How easy would it be to correlate any refuser data and make a map out of it with home addresses? It seems that the vaccine refused application can accomplish this task quite easily. The researchers at the University of Iowa say the data collected by the application is secure and anonymous. You and I should know better. This could be changed with a stroke of a pen. And heck, the CDC is paying for the research. Are you sure there isn't a hidden agenda? Well, the conclusion to this is that George Washington can be quoted as saying, "Government is not reason. It is not eloquent. It is force, like fire. It is a dangerous servant and a fearful master." What happens if we take the intention of the vaccine-refused phone application and immunization information system to its conclusion? Will these technologies be used to track you down and forcibly vaccinate you and your children? It sure seems that way to me. And this was written by Jeffrey John Alfderhide, okay, and Vactruth.com. Look at that, Vactruth.com. Check it out. Advertisements that you won't see again. It goes back to the early 50s. As for a better start in life, start cola earlier. An advertisement for Coca-Cola. You start your children, your little babies on it. Not soon enough, laboratory tests over the last few years have proven that babies who start drinking soda during the early formative period have a much higher chance of gaining acceptance and fitting in during those awkward preteen years. So do yourself a favor, do your child a favor, and start them on a strict regimen of sodas and other sugary carbonated beverages right now for a lifetime of guaranteed happiness. Soda Pop Board of America. Honest to God, folks, that was a real advertisement. Here's another one. This is a beauty. It says, according to repeated nationwide surveys, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette. Okay? yeah, this is true. Really true. You have testimonies from different doctors saying they love Camels. And there's another one. It says, before you sold me, Mom, maybe you'd better light up Marlboro. Yeah, using little babies to sell Camels and Marlboros. And gee, Mommy, you sure enjoy your Marlboro. And the guy says, yes, you need never fear more feel over-smoked. That's the miracle of Marlboro. Holy crap. And the stuff that we bought, man, the stuff we believed is so sick. So the harder a wife works, the cuter she looks. Oh, yeah. Vitamins for pep. Pep for vitamins. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, of course, Christmas morning, she'll be happier with a Hoover. I love that stuff. World's going crazy, folks. World's going crazy. Here's a little 5-minute video I like to read. It's a disgusted U.S. immigration agent faces down the Gang of Eight in dramatic Senate testimony. A must-watch to see how the United States is run by a tiny cabal with its own agenda, while the true representatives of the people are systematically excluded. Chris Kame, president of the National Immigration and Customs Enforcement Council, testified before Congress expressing his disgust that law enforcement was shut down of the negotiations on immigration reform. The Gang of Eight cross-party cabal includes the leaders of each of the two parties from both the Senate and House of Representatives, and the chairs and ranking minority members of both the Senate Committee and House Committee for Intelligence. Now listen to this, folks. Listen to this. This is an immigration official telling these dupas, these morons from hell that are in our, that are the Gang of Eight, okay, what immigration is all about. There you go. 5 minutes.
Americans should understand that this legislation only guarantees legal status for illegal aliens. It contains no promise of solving our nation's immigration problems, no guarantee of stronger enforcement on our nation's interior or its borders. It ignores the problems that have doomed our current immigration system to failure. I testify today without having the opportunity to read this bill in its entirety as the Gang of Eight's rush to pass this bill denies their fellow Americans the time and means of effectively studying the bill and adding input. This legislation was crafted behind closed doors with big business, big unions, and groups representing illegal aliens, groups with their own interests, groups that stand to make millions from this legislation. Anyone with a significantly different opinion on immigration reform was prohibited by the Gang of Eight from having input. Lawmaking in our nation has indeed taken a strange twist as senators invite illegal aliens to testify before Congress and groups representing the interests of illegal aliens are brought into the development of our nation's laws, but American citizens working as law enforcement officers within our nation's broken immigration system are purposely excluded from the process and prohibited from providing input. Last week, desperate to be heard, border sheriffs, interior sheriffs, deputies, and immigration agents all came to Washington, D.C. with the hope that the Gang of Eight would hear their concerns. They held two meetings on two separate days. Not one member of the Gang of Eight attended. Last week, when I respectfully asked a question of the Gang of Eight at their press conference, I was escorted out by police and Senate staff. I was spoken to with anger and disrespect. Never before have I seen such contempt for law enforcement officers as what I've seen from the Gang of Eight. Suffice it to say, following the Boston terrorist attack, I was appalled to hear the Gang of Eight telling America that its legislation is what American law enforcement needs. Since 2008, President Obama has ignored many of the immigration laws enacted by Congress and has instead created his own immigration system that unlawfully provides protections for millions of illegal aliens. Of course, Congress has done nothing to stop the president, and I submit to everyone that America will never have an effective immigration system as long as presidents and their appointees are permitted to ignore the United States Congress and pick and choose the laws they will enforce and indeed enact their own laws without Congress through agency policy. This bill does nothing to address these problems. In fact, unbelievably, it gives far greater authority and control to the president and the secretary of DHS, exactly the opposite of what our country needs to create a consistent and effective immigration system. If the laws enacted by Congress are not enforced by the executive, America has no promise of future enforcement. That much is certain. Currently at ICE, immigration agents have filed a lawsuit against DHS and ICE because both have refused to enforce the immigration laws enacted by Congress. Agents cannot arrest individuals for entering the United States illegally or overstaying visas. Agents are prohibited from enforcing laws regarding fraudulent documents and identity theft. Agents are not permitted to arrest public charges. Agents are forced to apply the Obama Dream Act, not to children in schools, but to adult inmates in jails. releasing criminals back into communities, criminals who have committed felonies, who have assaulted officers, and who prey on children. At an alarming rate, ICE deportation numbers have plummeted since 2008, evidence that interior enforcement has in large part been shut down, contrary to reports by presidential appointees at ICE and DHS. In closing, my initial impression of this bill thus far is that in large part it appears to have a lot of loopholes, everything from gang activity to arrest records to criminal backgrounds and fraudulent activities at many levels are acceptable or waiverable under this bill. The entry-exit system doesn't even utilize biometrics, making it ineffective yesterday. We already know that aliens are engaged in illegal activities that will bypass this system. At a time when Congress is proposing legalization for millions, I think Americans expected a stronger enforcement across the board that would prevent another wave of illegal immigration. Unfortunately, in terms of enforcement and providing for public safety, I think this bill is going to fall short in terms of legalization and eventual citizenship for 11 million illegal aliens. I think its success is guaranteed. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that concludes my testimony.
I didn't hear that whole thing.
Was with us, by the way.
I just came in. I was at a meeting. Can you summarize what was said there? Well, how long was that?
5 minutes.
5 minutes.
But the important thing was that this guy is the president of the immigration,
union?
And law enforcement officers.
Oh, okay.
And he said that that what they're trying to push through as an immigration bill is outright criminal.
Really?
Right. And
who's behind it?
Obama and all of the and all of the Senate and the Congress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're trying to push through this horrible, horrible bill that would allow 11 or 20 million illegal aliens to be here, and disregard and releasing people from prison who are criminals. And all kinds of things. And it's just
deporting the criminals?
No. And they're just, it's just a horrible, horrible joke.
So if you're illegal and you get arrested, you don't have to stay in prison. But if you're a citizen and you're arrested,
exactly right.
You have to stay in prison.
Exactly right.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
And they give them the dream.
Oh, and then they get scholarships.
They give them the dream thing. And they give them food stamps, and they give them everything they want. And these people are illegal as hell, okay? And they're criminals, they're drug gangs, they're letting them out of prison. It's just downright
unbelievable. I wasn't aware of that.
It's just unbelievable, you know?
Oh, and here's something. Looking down a city with martial law proves that people confined to their homes at gunpoint live in the land of the free.
Yeah,
this isn't
really a good example of it because there's not really any there's no words.
Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick does what no governor in modern U.S. history has ever done. He ordered nearly a million people to stay home. The greater Boston area shut down. Heavily armed officers in Watertown search for the suspect, house to house. Residents trapped in their homes but anxious to talk and communicate by phone, text, and the internet.
All day long, we just kept looking at each other, my husband and I, saying, is this really happening? And we're watching the TV, and it just felt like we were inside this strange nightmare.
Those inside their homes weren't allowed to leave, and those outside weren't allowed in.
It's super scary. Like, of all the places in Boston, I never thought that they would be right here.
The dramatic scene played out in front of our camera. Parents grabbing their children and running after spending the night hunkering in their houses and then finding themselves face to face with the muzzle of a SWAT officer's rifle. The guy's not, like, in my house.
35 cops, like, running towards us.
Heavily armored state police, their rifles locked in place, searching house after house, looking for the second suspect in Monday's marathon bombing. I hope the guy's not, like, in my house.
The is the thing that screwed up about this?
I guess it's not a celebration. I guess it's more of like a relief.
I personally can't stand watching this because you got this Boston Strong crap and you got all these people. But yet all these Boston guys were all cowering in their houses, you know, and waiting for the Boston police to come in and break down their doors, you know. I mean, what these Boston hypocritical morons.
Well, let's go to something else.
Is unbelievable to me.
Americans fear government more than terror. You should.
Well, this one's quite frightening because what happened was the CIA actually not only knew about the Boston bomber, but they were involved with the Boston bomber, okay? Which is what we figured all along when we saw this. According to a pair of recent polls, for the first time since 9/11 terrorist hijacking, Americans are more fearful their government will abuse constitutional liberties and fail to keep citizens safe.
Even in the wake of April 15th Boston Marathon bombing, in which a pair of Islamic radicals are accused of planting explosives that took the lives of three and wounded more than 280, the polls indicate Americans are hesitant to give up any further freedoms in exchange for increased security.
Right. And
I feel strongly about that, too.
I just want to go to this quick because this is like, this kind of freaks you out. From Angry Fan or something or other. The blog.
Boston bombers. Yeah, media.
Yeah. In Dagestan, the Russian military has killed
Shakhrudin Ashkhabov,
a member of the CIA-linked Abu Dujan Jihad group, or reportedly Tamerlan Sarnov, the CIA-linked Boston bomber, has met Shakhrudin Ashkhabov, all right? And
Shakhrudin Ashkhabov.
Right, during a visit to Russia.
Hmm.
And according to the Russian intelligence...
Ashkhabov recruited people to help the CIA to destabilize Russia.
Right. And reported Tamerlan Sarnov was recruited into Abu Dujan by William Plotnikov, known as the Canadian, whom Tamerlan may have met through boxing circles. Well, Plotnikov then introduced Tamerlan to Shakhrudin Ashkhabov. Okay, but anyway, to go on. What happened was,
reportedly, U.S. foreign aid money is used to finance the people attempting to destabilize Russia.
But remember, Abu Dujan, named after a terrorist called Abu Dujan, is linked to a Saudi Arabia's Salafism, which was originally an invention of the British intelligence.
And reportedly, U.S. aid money is used to finance the people attempting to destabilize Russia.
There you go.
Reportedly, in 2012, Russian intelligence spotted Tamerlan meeting CIA-backed terrorists. The USA allowed Tamerlan to fly overseas despite warnings from Russian intelligence and being listed in the U.S. terror database to America's no-fly list. According to the Russian media, bombing suspect Tamerlan met with Ashkhabov during his visit to Russia from January to July of 2012. Russian assassinates two CIA-linked terrorists tied to Boston bombings. The National Post quotes the respected Russian media news outlet Novaya Gazeta, which reported that while in Russia, Tamerlan was observed meeting with Plotnikov, known as the Canadian and other CIA-backed terrorists. According to the Post, Tamerlan returned to America just 2 days after Plotnikov, the Canadian, was killed along with six other militants by Russian security forces in July 2012. Tamerlan may have returned to the USA because the CIA needed him for the Boston plot. Tamerlan's uncle was on the Fed's payroll and linked to the CIA in his roles as an oil company executive involved in multi-billion-dollar money laundering schemes involving offshore shell companies and Russian crime bosses.
Russia assassinates two CIA-linked terrorists tied to the bomb, all right? And so that kind of tells you what's going on, folks.
scary.
Doesn't it freak you out?
So they killed everybody that was connected with them
in
Russia.
That's right, yeah. And then they killed them here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
so you have no...
And we knew this was a false flag. We knew it going in.
I was hoping it wasn't.
We hoped it wasn't, but it definitely was. And it was just,
icing on the cake to when their Sandy Hook people didn't give up their constitutional rights there.
Yeah.
Now they just upped it a little by having this.
Yeah. And it says a Russian death squad killed two members of the CIA-backed Russian Jihad group operating in Dagestan in a raid earlier this morning that Russian intelligence was linked to Boston bombings.
Suspect Tamarin Tarasnov.
The assassinations are just the latest in a trail of blood being used to cover up the tracks implicating CIA involvement in the Boston bombings. Russian intelligence reports Sakhudin Azabov, one of the two men assassinated in the hit squad, was an associate of the CIA-linked Abu Dajjan terror cell. The Western corporate media is not reporting anything more than the talking points outlined in well-crafted government-issued talk points memo. But Russian intelligence and news agencies are telling an entirely different story, reporting Askubov was a key facilitator in recruiting and enlisting foreigners to take up against Russia.
The emerging narrative is Tamerlan was recruited into the organization by William Plotnikov, a jihadist known as the Canadian, which Tamerlan may have met through boxing circles. Plotnikov was in turn introduced Tamerlan to Askubov, who is said to recruit Muslims into jihad using Saudi Arabia's religious teachings and through the CIA's political propaganda. Abu Dajjan, like al-Qaeda and numerous other jihad groups, preach an extremist, fundamentalist interpretation of Saudi Arabia's Salafism, which is propagated throughout the world through the nation's vast oil wealth. The Chechen terror cell is used by the CIA and generated anti-Russian political propaganda in a direct result of overseas information operations funded by U.S. foreign aid money to promote democracy in the region. The CIA campaign by radicalized citizens in the region to take up the revolution through various means, ranging from workshops encouraging citizens to develop, promote, and assert their own independent national identity, all the way to repeatedly leveraging Russian crimes committed against locals decades ago, while under communist rule, such as the mass deportation and genocide committed during the World War II. That's a little awkward the way that was written.
Yeah.
A quote from Russian President Vladimir Putin is very telling about the United States' position on the terror cell. Moscow. Russian President Vladimir Putin said the bombings proved that Boston is a Chechen separatist terrorist group. Boston bombers, Tamerlan and what's the other guy? His brother, Zokar, indeed citizens of Chechen descent. So far, Russia asked the United States to enter into the Chechen separatist terrorist group list, but the U.S. rejected it because it considers militant Chechen rebel group as usual. A little awkward translation. I feel insulted when a terrorist group called the West Country as a rebel group in Chechnya, Putin said.
Tamerlan was observed by the Russian intelligence in 2012, meeting up with several members of the CIA-backed terror cell to wage jihad against Russia.
Mm.
This clearly explains why Tamerlan was allowed to fly overseas, despite warning from Russian intelligence of being listed in the U.S. terror base and to American no-fly list. According to the Russian media, Boston bombing suspect Tamerlan Tarasnov met with Abuskov during his visit to Russia in January to July of 2012.
That's kind of creepy.
Yeah. Anyway, so and it goes on a little bit more, but it has also revealed. Let's see, it must not be plausible that Tamerlan has already joined the CIA insurgency against the Russians and returned to America, because his handlers had a much more sinister gunpowder treason plot, and they needed to carry out. It is has also been revealed that Tamerlan's uncle was on the Fed's payroll.
Yeah, we read that.
Yeah, his oil company and so on. So
maybe that's why he was standing in front of such a nice brick house.
Yeah. Maybe that was that the uncle they were talking about?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Wouldn't surprise me either. Unbelievable, folks. Just freaking believable.
I guess he sacrificed his two nephews.
Well, he sacrificed his two nephews, but it sounds like that was a little more than that. You know, his mother was involved, and his father was involved,
His father's sick.
Yeah, well, who knows why. If that's real or not.
Very sick.
Okay.
Well, we've come to 9 o'clock, so it's the end of the show. So I thank you for being with us, and I hope that you enjoy the rest of your night. And stay tuned tomorrow for our show, which will focus on union issues. And I hope you tune in for us at the same time, 8 o'clock. And I hope you have a good evening. So good night, folks.
Good night, everybody. I just posted that article to my Facebook account.
Okay.
So everybody.
So we should play our music, our timeout. You got some music there, Leo?
Yep. So thank everybody for joining us, and join us tomorrow, right here, same time, same place. And good night, everybody.